Flyover Politic Podcast, the show for normal Americans. From this undisclosed bunker, here's your host, Tony Reed.
On Capitol Hill today, two former top military commanders were grilled before House lawmakers over the deadly U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan. 13 U.S. service members and 170 Afghan civilians were killed in a suicide bomb attack at the airport in Kabul. That was back in August of 2021. Former chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff Mark Milley and retired General Kenneth McKenzie placed blame on the State Department for waiting too long to order evacuations. Milley acknowledging he doesn't know the exact number of Americans or Afghans who helped the U.S. trying to escape the Taliban who were left behind.
And welcome back to Flyover Politic Podcast. It's 21st of March, year of our Lord, 2024. That soundbite, of course, boys and girls, is bullshit. Any other administration, anybody else, we'd have fucking problems, but we're going to let them go in there and just say, I don't know. By now, if you're saying, I don't know, you're hiding things, which is what they're doing. But I had to start the show with it because in total, that event sums up this administration. But of course, what do we see from... What do we see? We fucking see what? Nothing. Republicans pounce. Republicans fixate on messy Afghanistan withdrawal. Republicans pounce. You're serious, right? This is serious. To me, these sound bites, folks, this is some Bush League shit.
I was the overall commander, and I alone bear full military responsibility for what happened at Abbey Gate.
Failure to plan for their withdrawal threatened the safety and security of U.S. personnel.
The outcome in Afghanistan was the cumulative effect of many decisions over many years of war.
I'd like to talk a little bit now about Abbey Gate. It was a tragic event, one of many that have occurred over our 20-year engagement in Afghanistan. It remains my opinion that if there is culpability in this attack, it lies in policy decisions that created the environment of August 2021 in Kabul. Culpability and responsibility do not lie with the troops on the ground who perform magnificently. It does not lie with the platoon, company, or battalion commanders or the flag officers who oversaw operations on the ground in Kabul. The simple fact is this. On the battlefield, even with good planning, tremendous execution by brave people on the ground, the enemy sometimes has success. To ignore this fact is to ignore the fundamental reality of the battlefield. If there's fault, it lies in a policy decision that placed the joint force in this situation and exposed the force over time to the possibility of these kinds of attacks. We did not rely on the Taliban for our security. We used them as one tool among many to beef up our defensive posture. We avoided a number of potential Abbey Gate attacks, and I'm proud of the commanders and troops who prevented them. This is small comfort to those who lost loved ones, and I realize this. Nonetheless, what's remarkable about Kabul is not that the tragedy of Abbey Gate happened, but that many other attacks did not happen. I'll end my statement with this observation. I was the overall commander, and I alone bear full military responsibility for what happened at Abbey Gate.
For the decision to set the date and to set the troop level to zero.
Yes.
So he bears responsibility, not just you.
That's correct.
The outcome in Afghanistan was the cumulative effect of many decisions over many years of war. And like any complex phenomena, there's no single causal factor that determined the outcome, but multiple factors in combination. In the fall of 2020, as I previously testified publicly, my analysis, my personal analysis, was that an accelerated withdrawal would likely lead to the general collapse of the Afghan security forces and the Afghan government, resulting in a large-scale civil war reminiscent of the 1990s or a complete Taliban takeover. In November 2020, DOD received orders from the White House to reduce troop levels to 2,500 by January 15, 21. When the current administration took office in January 21, there were roughly speaking 2,500 U.S. troops on the ground with about 22,000 NATO troops and contractors. Beginning in February 21, the National Security Council conducted a 10-week interagency review of the Doha Agreement, and various options were presented and debated. In previous public testimony, I noted that at that time, my analysis, based on my assessment and the recommendations of the commanders, to include General McKenzie, and the consensus of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, was that we needed to maintain a minimum force of 2,500 troops on the ground, mostly special forces, with allied troops and contractors, in order to sustain the Afghan National Security Forces and its government until the diplomatic conditions of the Doha Agreement were met.
Just days before the fall of Kabul and the evacuation of the embassy, August 14th is when they finally put forward this plan.
Now that's when we got authority to execute the plan.
That's when you got authority to, and you urged the White House and State Department to put pen to paper to develop a plan to get Americans and our Afghan allies out of Afghanistan, correct?
Yes, I did. In fact, I was concerned by the middle of July. I was concerned about the different pace of Department of Defense planning as compared to Department of State planning. And I took an opportunity then to make representations to the Secretary about my concern over that, the fact that we were moving pretty fast on this. They were not moving fast, and I was concerned that we were going to arrive at different locations just based on it. And I went to the Secretary. We spent some time talking about that, and actually followed up with a written idea on some things that we could do. Sent a letter with 10 recommendations to the Secretary of Defense on that.
And I think multiple things can be true. A lot of times in this town, we like to, it's an and or kind of deal, right? It's either Trump was responsible or Biden was responsible, right? I actually think in Afghanistan, it's an and, quite frankly. I think there were mistakes made in the withdrawal. I think the American people think there were mistakes made in the withdrawal. And I think it's okay to admit that. I mean, what's the opposite of that? That the withdrawal was perfect? Everything went according to plan? General Miller, do you think mistakes were made in either the planning phases, things that we thought were going to happen that didn't happen, or things on the ground that unfolded that we didn't plan for? You think mistakes were made in all of that thought process?
There's zero doubt in my mind there were mistakes made, and that's the point of the after-action reviews. Identify those mistakes and develop solutions to implement them in the future. And I think the fundamental mistake, fundamental flaw, was the timing of the State Department call of the NEO. I think that was too slow and too late, and that then caused a series of events that result in the very last couple of days. Number of Americans. This was always an issue. The number of Americans is. General McKenzie said, an F-77 report is supposed to, every ambassador in every country of the world keeps an F-77 report, and they're supposed to track the Americans, where they're at, the phone numbers, address, et cetera, in the country. That was always a difficult number for us in the Department of Defense to get a hold of, and I think it's true at the tactical level and operational level as well. And I'll be candid. I don't know the exact number of Americans that were left behind because the starting number was never clear. Same is true of at-risk Afghans, SIVs, the commandos, other Afghans that served with us. Those numbers varied so widely that they were quite inaccurate, as best I could tell at the time. So I would just say I'm not sure, even today, about the accuracy of all those numbers.
Do you know where the Secretary of State was on August 13th? The day before Kabul fell, do you know where the Secretary of State was? Despite all of your concerns, State Department wasn't planning fast enough. We weren't getting our people out. According to the Washington Post, he was in the Hamptons. He was in the Hamptons on vacation. Secretary of State Blinken. I don't know. I can't even imagine how that makes our Gold Star families feel. Look, here's the bottom line, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for your indulgence. I'll close with this. The State Department, to use a military term, had its head up its rear. It wasn't planning. It, in fact, thought we could just have an embassy and the good Taliban terrorists will take care of the bad Taliban terrorists. I mean, that's essentially what happened. And because of that, we didn't get our people out. We didn't get our citizens out. We didn't have the force posture. We didn't have the basing. We failed, and their loved ones are dead because of it.
I quote, withdrawal from Afghanistan, all military forces of the United States, its allies, coalition partners, including all non-diplomatic civilian personnel, private security contractors, trainers, advisors, and supporting service personnel. Is that correct? That was the Doha deal done under the Trump administration. Is that correct?
As I recall, I think there was 7 conditions that the United States signed up to and 8 conditions that the Taliban signed up to. And I think you rattled off most of the key ones. It was a very explicit thing. It said you had to go from there were 13,000, more or less, 13,000 U.S. troops when Doha was signed, and then it was you had to go to 8,600 in 135 days.
Let me just do this. I want to make sure. And so, therefore, the withdrawal was well underway in January 2021 after President Trump withdrew U.S. forces, notwithstanding concerns about the Taliban's behavior. Is that correct?
The withdrawal was absolutely underway. The drawdown of forces was underway. That's correct.
Had we not withdrawn and not ended the war, would we be at open war with the Taliban?
I think the probability is greater than not that the Taliban would have reinitiated combat operations on 1 May or 2 May. The Doha agreement says all force out by 1 May. The current administration, the State Department negotiated with the Taliban to get that extended, Zalkalizade did, to get that extended until September, I guess it was, to buy some additional time. But there's little question in my mind that had the United States, that either president's agreement to withdraw, if we didn't withdraw 100%, then we would have been back at war with the Taliban. That's right.
To watch this entire hearing, download our free app C-SPAN now or visit cspan.org.
This is a serious journalist right here. Well, not really serious, but this is a journalist. Really? That's what you're going to go with? That's what we're going with? Are you serious? You can't actually be serious. For fuck's sake, people. Then we have, the Bobulinski stuff. That I understand what the right's trying to do, but none of this is going to fly because the media won't support it. And if they won't support it, it's just Benghazi hearings all over.
Biden gave his transcribed interview on February 28th and lied throughout his testimony. Here's just one egregious example of Hunter's perjury. He lied to the committee on important details concerning his money demands and threats to CFC in text messages on July 30th and 31st, 2017. He leveraged his father's presence next to him in that infamous text to strong-arm CFC to paying Hunter immediately. Jim Biden also lied extensively throughout his transcribed interview on February 21st and perjured himself. An example of that, on page 100 of his transcript, Jim is asked specifically, do you recall having a meeting with Hunter Biden, Tony Bobulinski, and Joe Biden? Jim's response, absolutely not. The committee was so shocked by his perjury that they asked him the same question multiple times. Each time he denied meeting with me and Joe Biden. After the committee showed him text messages confirming that I met with Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and Jim Biden at the Beverly Hilton in May 2017, Jim Biden, with a former U.S. attorney lawyer sitting next to him, still denied that meeting took place. Hunter Biden, in his own transcribed interview, confirmed that that meeting took place. Hunter confirmed his uncle perjured himself in front of this committee. I'm simply here to tell the truth to the American people, and I hope...
Mr. Bobulinski, I heard your opening statement. It's submitted to the record, part of our proceedings. I have a quick question. Simple. Is it your testimony today that you personally witnessed President Joe Biden commit a crime?
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a
business deal. Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir? Specifically.
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question. No. RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is the
It's a category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged
You
under
have charges.
A long hundred
You have charges.
Statutes.
Sir, yeah. Please
you want me to
name
the exact statute
sir?
Under RICO?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18.
All right. So-
and then there's AOC. This is just an embarrassing. The people vote for this child is troubling.
Mr. Bobulinski, I heard your opening statement. It's submitted to the record, part of our proceedings. I have a quick question. Simple. Is it your testimony today that you personally witnessed President Joe Biden commit a crime?
I believe the fact that he was sitting with me while I was putting together a
business
deal.
Did you witness the president commit a crime? Is it your testimony today?
Yes.
And what crime do you have you witnessed?
How much time do I have to go through it?
It is simple. You name the crime. Did you watch him steal something?
Corruption statutes, RICO and conspiracy.
What is it? What is the crime, sir? Specifically.
You asked me to answer the question. I answered the question.
No.
RICO, you're obviously not familiar with. Corruption
Excuse
statutes.
Excuse me, sir. Excuse me, sir. RICO is not a crime. It is a category. What is
it's
the
category
crime?
Of crimes that you're then charged
You
under
have charges.
A long hundred
You have charges. Statute. Sir, yeah. Please
you want me to
name
the exact statute
sir,
under RICO?
Yes.
Well, it's funny. In this committee room, everyone's not here. There's over 18
All right, sir. I reclaim my
lawyers
time.
That went to law school.
I reclaim my time.
I'll
reclaim
leave it
my
up
time.
To you guys
okay,
to
thank
define
you,
the
sir.
Statute
I reclaim my time.
RICO.
Clearly, what we are seeing here today is a continuation of the 15-month saga of the Republican majority lost in the desert. Impeachment 101. The majority party or whomever is raising impeachment must accuse the president of a high crime, a specific high crime or misdemeanor. I would like to submit to the record HRES 918, the House resolution to open this impeachment inquiry.
Without objection to order.
This resolution does not outline a high crime or misdemeanor. It's not here. Now, when we compare the chairman's opening from his previous opening, he's talking about Ukraine and Burisma and all of this. It is this entire inquiry is based on a blockbuster piece of information that was in a classified SCIF room. And inside that room was a document alleging President Biden directly of a $10 million bribery scheme. A $10 million bribery scheme. Extremely serious. What happened? What happened a month ago, Mr. Chairman? That document, the FBI arrested the person who offered those allegations for falsifying his testimony to the FBI. This entire impeachment inquiry is based on an actual, provable individual who has lied. Now, responsible leadership would withdraw an inquiry based on that. Withdraw it. Instead, what we are seeing is that this committee was warned about the falsehoods of these allegations long before that, warned by Trump Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and yet they proceeded anyway. The chairman proceeded anyway. This committee was warned by Rudy Giuliani associate right here, Lev Parnas, after that document about the falsehoods of this. Then held hearings where your own expert witnesses said that there was no grounds for impeachment, and you proceeded anyway. And finally, as if none of this was enough, the FBI arrested the individual who was the source of the entire, to quote the chairman, heart of the matter, to launch this impeachment inquiry, and proceeded anyway. At this point, the story is not the fact that the basis of this impeachment inquiry is wrong. The story is why it's proceeding anyway. Why is this committee proceeding based on false charges? And if there, and by the way, no charges. I have yet to hear in the chairman's opening the allegation that they are specifically charging the president of the United States with. I'm hearing about Biden family. I'm hearing about this and that. I am not hearing the specific allegation by this committee. What is it? It's not here. And that is the problem. The story is when this committee knew that they were working with falsified evidence. That's the story. And with that, I yield back.
Gentlelady yields back.
Since they're doing so bad, look at this. Christine Baszi Ford, new memoir, placed her Senate testimony in a wider context of her life. And as her story goes on, it comes to read as an indictment, not of one person, but of a form of politics that sees stories as weapons in an endless war. Are you fucking shitting me? I got a new mount for the computers. And for the love of God and everything holy, I'm having a hard time. I want to keep looking up at that computer because that computer used to be right there. And I got a straight up one. Makes it so much easier to use. But it's so confusing. Use it for weapons. We just did bloodbath. Here is Baszi Ford on fucking TV, man. They're on TV talking about Baszi Ford.
Yeah. Well, you've been called a highly credible witness, and you have a PhD in psychology. You're a professor. You teach at Palo Alto and Stanford universities. But even today, some people remain skeptical of your story. And you write that during the hearing, Senator Lindsey Graham wouldn't even make eye contact with you. Were you prepared for that kind of response?
I was prepared ahead of time that that none of the Republicans were going to speak with me, and they were going to use an outside interviewer. And so I was actually surprised at how kind some of the other Republican senators were who broke that protocol and said hello.
Who was that? Can you name a good one?
Senator Flake and Senator Sass both came over and
neither
said,
neither one's in Congress anymore, yeah. Right?
Yeah. But still, a credit.
Yeah,
good for them.
Both good men.
Yeah.
I didn't think, why don't I just move the fucking camera? It used to be on a stand and everything, and now it's just on the computer ledge or on the monitor ledge. So now that's better. It makes more sense. Even if I look up, I could see it. So we're good. We're baseline. Why are we talking about Baszi Ford? Why is that news? Why? I don't understand why we're doing it. It doesn't make sense to me that we're still fucking talking about Baszi Ford, a used up lady who, no offense, lied. There is no proof of anything she ever did. It's the same thing when Trump just got in trouble, and I hate to bust the left's bubble. Folks, nobody believes that fucking case. It's not working. It doesn't work. Nobody's going to believe Trump did. This is a civil case that you're trying to bankrupt him. And all your comedians and all your little flacks are saying it. Bankrupt, 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 bankrupt. Bankrupt Trump. Yay. It's so desperate. SCOTUS has got a new case they're going through. And this is on fucking PBS. Sorry, buddy. That was a Vivek video, so it's dated. We're not gonna watch it. I wanna watch this though. This came out this week. This right here. There is no replacement theory. There's a strategy.
The Democrat open borders plan to entrench single party rule, explained in under 2 minutes. 1. Flood the country with untold millions of illegals by land, sea, and air from all over the world. Enough to eclipse the populations of 36 individual U.S. states so far. 2. Prioritize the needs of these millions of non-citizens over the needs of the American citizen, with free flights, buses, hotels, meals, and phones, ensuring their loyalty to the political party that imported them. 3. Keep them in the country at all costs, even when they commit violent crime like murder and rape. Attack the language used to describe the criminals, as opposed to the criminals themselves. Slander critics as racist. 4. Ensure their privileges are made irrevocable with city and state sanctuary laws that act as population magnets. Codify permanent status and ensure non-cooperation with ICE. 5. Count the non-citizens in the census that will determine congressional apportionment in the House of Representatives. As of now, that would equal 13 extra congressional districts, a tremendous amount of electoral power. 6. Wage a massive, heavily funded lawfare campaign to change state voting laws that legalize mass mail-in ballots, no signature verification, and no proof of citizenship requirements, making it nearly impossible to prove voter fraud. 7. Lock in the permanent voting majority with campaign promises of lavish benefits and permanent privileges, enshrining generational fealty to the Democrat Party. 8. Win elections. 9. Entrenched single-party rule has been achieved. The best part? Your tax dollars are paying for it.
Yeah, that's nice. That's nice. That's really nice. That's what they're doing. People want to think they don't, but that's what they're doing. This is the whole thing. The whole thing is coming down to, we are going to let them across. And Elon Musk gave that. He posted that video, which is fucking amazing. Just totally amazing. Judge says that the illegals get Second Amendment rights. That's fucking insane. That is, it's a liberal judge. So usually we would say, no, that's not true, because guns are bad. But now that it's illegals, oh yeah, we're going to give them the guns, because they're illegals. So good deal. You're bad, they're good. These are all the names. There are so many names and faces that we don't even cover. We don't cover this shit because it doesn't fit in the fucking prescribed narrative, is what I was trying to say. That they're all peaceful people. It's us that are fucked up. New border wall says they're worried about, I guess I didn't get these, so I apologize. Yeah. How much are your groceries after Trump has rounded up all the field workers? Because that's all they are, is field workers. But here is MSNBC talking about 9/11 calls not being picked up. And then simultaneously, we're going to go straight into some more about the Google. It finally hit the air. We broadcasted earlier here on the Flyover Politics podcast.
So, Marissa, first, you work closely with asylum seekers. You're so familiar with the community. How worried are people about this confusing, first of all, about the law, and then all the back and forth with the courts?
So both SB4s that we have before us have caused already a great deal of harm, whether it's a chilling effect, a bit of psychological warfare, a bit of panic and insecurity. And so I think that's actually the law's goal. If you're basically anything other than perhaps a white individual or a white passing person, this law could very easily affect you. And it's important that the larger United States understand that what's happening in Texas is really a push against the multiracial democracy that this state already is.
And Marissa, some of the issues that may not bubble up to, you know, the governor's concerns are things like the Houston Police Department. They're concerned about the law threatening the connections that they have built over the years with the immigrant communities, the trust. You know, would someone, you know, refuse a 911 call, an emergency call for fear, or not call 911 when they really need help for fear of being arrested?
Of course, you know, we are all human beings looking out for the safety and well-being of our families, our neighbors, and our friends. And so in light of attacks like this by our own state, it definitely has a chilling effect and makes people question, is this peace officer someone I can actually trust, or are they instead going to be forced by the state to interrogate me, my loved ones, and potentially jail me or deport me? That gives people great pause. And again, this is really the goal of this legislation, which has now become law, is designed to really disenfranchise and silence communities of color throughout the state of Texas.
Marissa Limon Garcia, Jennifer Babayi, thank you so much. You bring so much important.
Well, you know the phrase, just Google it. Maybe not so fast. A new study by a conservative media watchdog group claims Google has been interfering in major U.S. elections since way back in 2008. The senior national correspondent Kevin Cork back live with more on that story. Kevin.
Trace, this is something else. The Media Research Center says Google has interfered with elections, get this, 41 times over the last 16 years, and its impact, they claim, has surged dramatically, making it, quote, ever more harmful to democracy. The MRC claims that in every single case, Google harmed the candidates, regardless of party, who threatened its left-wing candidate of choice. Examples include Google using its algorithm to exclude autofill results that were potentially damaging to Hillary Clinton back in 2016, but not doing the same for people like, say, Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders. They also allegedly disabled Tulsi Gabbard's ads account just when she became the most searched candidate following the first Democratic Party primary in 2020, and suppressing news critical of Joe Biden, even concealing most Republican campaign websites for the 12 competitive Senate races as recently as 2022. Now, the MRC says this, Google's outsized influence on information technology, the body politic, and American elections became evident back in 2008 after failing to prevent then-candidate President Donald Trump from being inaugurated following the 2016 election. Google has since made clear to any discerning observer that it has been and will continue interfering in America's elections. Now, of course, Google, as you can imagine, pushed back, insisting it has a clear business incentive to keep both sides happy and that safeguards to ensure non-biased and accurate search results are there. Trace.
Just trying to keep everybody happy.
Everybody happy.
Live in D.C., thank you. Let's bring in ONET Chief Operating Officer and media personality Amanda Brohanty, along with Media Research Center TV contributing writer Stephanie Hamill. Welcome to you both. Stephanie, to you first. I mean, this kind of sums it up. Quoting here, over the years, Google has repeatedly used its power to help push the most liberal candidates to electoral victory while targeting their opponents. I mean, it really is true. I was just talking to Amanda about this, where, you know, you Google something and the Washington Post always comes up in the top 10, right? And you want the Washington Examiner, it's like, well, let's go 5 or 6 or 7 pages deep to get some information on that. What do you think?
Yeah, it's incredible how it always seems to work one way, which is favor the left. It never seems to favor Republicans or Republican candidates. Although you did note that there were instances where it appeared where Google was actually favoring the most liberal of the candidates. And I found the point very intriguing that in 2008, that Google was allegedly boosting Barack Obama over Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary. And you have to wonder if that had played a role in helping him get over the finish line. So, you know, this is tremendously of a great importance to the American people, because so many people trust Google. They are unsuspecting, assuming that they're just getting information, not realizing that there are powerful people behind there, potentially the Google overlords, who are trying to influence the way you think and the way that you vote.
It's becoming like it's a brand. It's like Vaseline or Coke. You just say, oh, just Google it, right? You need something, just Google it. That's the way it is. The cyber guy, Kurt Knudsen, said the following. Watch.
This is just another example why algorithms like the one that operates the big tech beast, Google, should be transparent. It should be not left up to one group to control what we see, when we see it. And they're just passing around the megaphone to whoever they choose. And that is how this works.
And Amanda, transparency would be a very good thing, I think, in this situation, right?
I completely agree. And you're right. Google is like a brand. But when it comes to transparency, people are being bothered by this. It's very clear that they feel like they're being censored, that they feel like it's not transparent. You look at Google, you look at search engine optimization results, SEO. Google can change what you see based off of keywords, based off of quality. So if they can change what you see based off of that, who's to say they also can't hide information, which is what we saw with that report. I think them bringing up Tulsi is a fantastic point as well, because this is a bigger issue. Yeah. Every American should be questioning what is going on. This has to do with our First Amendment, with freedom of speech.
Yeah, I mean, that's exactly right. And then you kind of come across this thing, and you, every time you Google or you look for something, we should say, just kind of search the internet for something, it kind of comes up in an interesting way. So the media is still going crazy, Stephanie Hamill, on Trump's bloodbath comment. He was clearly talking about the auto industry, and today we had Guy Benson saying the following. Watch.
I do think it helps Trump, because if you want Donald Trump to say something genuinely offensive, wait 5 minutes, right? He's going to at some point. You don't have to invent something and then rush out there to try to hammer him, because then people say, these are not reliable narrators. These are not truthful people.
But when you invent something, Stephanie Hamill, you look bad and people don't trust you. And when you lose your credibility, you're done.
This isn't the first time this has happened to Trump. In fact, it's a vicious cycle where he is taken out of context. The mainstream media reporters, not everyone, but a lot of them go with it. Even though they have the ability to watch the entire clip, understand the context of it, they choose not to for some reason. And then they go with it. And then they hardly ever apologize. In fact, many of them are rewarded with promotions, better jobs, a bigger audience. So we saw this again. He clearly wasn't talking about a J6 bloodbath. He was talking about the automotive industry. And today, we're still seeing those who were pushing this whole lie, this hoax, again, not apologizing for it. And they're saying, oh, well, you know, he doesn't actually have to mean it, but we know what he means. No,
right, but that's the whole thing. Yeah, man, they keep going at this thing, and they keep going at back to the same well, and eventually they're going to learn. I mean, they've got to pay the price at some point in time.
That's pretty jacked up. Darcy rips Elon Musk because now he's putting up stuff about the border, which they don't like. I was going to play this. This is Biden. They just, of course, they're not going to cover it. They're just never going to cover this shit because it doesn't fit. So I want to play two crazy sound bites that there was no fucking way a Democrat or Republican get away with this shit. This is Katie Porter saying that Trump's going to die, and a spokesman at the White House saying something about, when did you stop beating your wife to do?
And so people were like, we gotta think everything, every decision has to be made in tension with Trump. Mm. Soon, Trump will lose or go to prison.
Grabian,
I don't
know. Multimedia marketplace.
Have a heart attack. I'm not sure.
We call it the hamburger.
I don't know what his demise is going to be, but he'll have his demise. And the question will still be there. Who are we as Democrats?
Why did President Biden wait so long? Why did he let 32 days pass between phone calls with Prime Minister Netanyahu?
Well, so first of all, our teams are in contact every single day at every level. President Biden gets a daily, twice daily, sometimes nine times daily update on what is going on.
There's a report that when President Biden was told his handling of the war between Israel and Hamas was starting to affect his poll numbers, the quote is, he began to shout and swear. So when he does that, is he shouting and swearing about Netanyahu or about Hamas or about his poll numbers?
This is the when did you stop beating your spouse question, because I don't think he ever did that. And so, well, you use that as the premise of your question, which is when he does that. I've never seen him do that, shout or swear in response to that. So from my perspective, that particular report is not correct.
Why is it that it seems so hard for this administration to stand up more firmly to Benjamin Netanyahu? He has been ignoring many of your requests. He's now threatening to launch an offensive in Rafah. And the answer from the White House so far has been pretty soft, and the U.S. are still sending weapons to Israel. So it seems like there is a big cautiousness from the White House.
We have now 1 million people faced with the risk of starvation, and aid is not getting in at the levels necessary to help those people. Who's responsible for that? And during this call, was there any kind of commitment from the part of the...
Dude, what the fuck, man? What the fuck does that even mean? How can you say that and get away from it? One of the sound bites, and I know we're doing a lot of side bites lately because there's just so much data. This is one of those moments that I love, because we talk about the right when it's a Supreme Court nominee that's conservative. We talk ad nauseum about, they're too far gone. They don't have jurisprudence and la 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 la. This is the the black lady. This is her talking about how the First Amendment hamstrings the law.
Thanks,
Justice Jackson.
So my biggest concern is that your view has the First Amendment hamstringing the government in significant ways in the most important time periods. What would you have the government do? I've heard you say a couple times that the government can post its own speech, but in my hypothetical, kids, this is not safe, don't do it, is not going to get it done. And so I guess some might say that the government actually has a duty to take steps to protect the citizens of this country, and you seem to be suggesting that that duty cannot manifest itself in the government encouraging or even pressuring platforms to take down harmful information. So can you help me? Because I'm really worried about that, because you've got the First Amendment operating in an environment of threatening circumstances from the government's perspective, and you're saying that the government can't interact with the source of those problems.
The media is so bad on this. This is the Atlantic magazine. They're asking Sotomayor to retire from the Supreme Court because she's not liberal enough. Just a little while ago, she was good to go. Not anymore. City of Chicago and Everytown Law announced we're suing Glock for facilitating the proliferation of illegal machine guns on the street of Chicago by manufacturing semi-automatic pistols that can easily be converted to fully automatic. And they will get actually nothing. It's Everytown. Glock's the most popular handguns in America, so what Everytown is actually announcing there is that they want to ban handguns. Thank you! Because that's what it's always been about. It's not about... Not at all. Really about guns, folks. It's about taking away your fucking rights. They don't want you to have rights. Who the fuck are you? You don't vote liberal. In the crazy files, Supreme Court opens new frontier to insurrection claims that could target state and local officials. That is not what the Supreme Court did. But you can go with yourself. As we talk about Supreme Court, it's really interesting that once again, every time we get a nominee, like if Trump wins, we're going to go through all the nominees for all the positions, and we have a big deal about it, and oh my God, this person's bad, that person's good, what the fuck, Chuck? Well, watch this fucking train wreck.
You said, quote, assault weapons may be banned because they're extraordinarily dangerous and are not appropriate for legitimate self-defense purposes, close quote. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Thank you, Senator Kennedy. Just to clarify, there, I was local counsel. Our Supreme.
Yeah, but you wrote the brief. Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
Senator Kennedy, actually, I did not write the brief. The brief was written by.
You signed the brief, though, didn't
correct.
You?
Correct. I signed
and
the brief.
When you sign a brief, you're testifying to the court that everything in it is true, right?
Yes. Okay. That and I
so they're your words in terms of the court, right?
Well, you're correct, Senator Kennedy. Okay. I would never
so
sign.
Tell me what you meant by assault weapons.
So I am not a gun expert, and at the time that brief, I think was about 10 years.
You were given the court advice about say ban assault weapons. What is you told the court you were an expert. Just tell me what you wanted to ban,
Senator. Sitting here today, as I said, I did not write that brief. I was local counsel.
Sign the brief.
I understand. At the time,
tell me what you wanted to ban. That's all I want to know, Judge.
I don't remember the exact definition of assault weapons in the ordinance that was at issue.
So you submitted a brief to the to an appellate brief. You signed it, and you don't know what. And you said abolish assault weapons, and you don't know what you wanted them to abolish.
Senator, at the time that I signed the brief, I read the brief because our Supreme Court required someone, an Illinois bar member, to sign the brief. I was not responsible for researching the content.
You were responsible for the brief.
Absolutely, absolutely. And sitting here today, I do not remember the characteristics of that were cited in the ordinance for the assault weapons ban. It's not an area of practice that I have specialized in. I'm sure 10 years ago I could have answered your question.
And
but
Judge,
sitting here
want,
today,
you think Senator, you deserve to be promoted? With this record,
Senator, I stand by my record. I stand by my record.
Man, tell me that would fly if it was a Republican. Probably not. In the Trump section, which we've got to have from now until the election, to make Israel a partisan issue only hurts Israel and the U.S.-Israeli relationship. Trump is making highly partisan and hateful rants. I'm working in a bipartisan way to ensure U.S.-Israel relationship sustains generations to come buoyed by peace in the Middle East. I could say it, but I'm going to let Carol Markowitz. Bro, you tried to overthrow their fucking election. You hypocritical sack of fucking shit. And he gets away with this shit all the time. He could stand on the steps of the Congress and say, Trump is evil and Gorsuch, we're going to fuck you up. We can do that because that's what they do. I mean, it's just what they do all the time. It is every day and twice on Sunday we do this. So here's our sound bites. We have Jimmy Kimmel, Reed. They talk. It's just a litany of inappropriate shit with very violent rhetoric.
But of all the very disturbing things he said, this was probably most disturbing.
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it.
The longer this election goes, the more he talks like Thanos. He's saying bloodbath. So after the bloodbath remark, people went like, oh, that's not great. So Trump went into spin mode saying he was only talking about a bloodbath in the auto industry. He had to post an explanation on Truth Social, which is on fire, by the way. They even had to activate the Fox and Friends to do damage control.
And with Donald Trump, you have to watch and don't let people report what they think he said. Context is always important, and we try to give you as much of it as we possibly can.
But if you watch a mainstream media outlet, right, you don't get the whole story.
Just watch us. We'll tell you both sides.
So true.
So true. Not just true. So true. There are very fine people on both sides of the bloodbath. The truth is, the context we should be considering isn't whether or not Trump
meant bloodbath. Literally, what we should is that he's such a lunatic, we actually have to debate if he meant it literally. We have to ask, was that totally crazy or just kind of...
As dangerous and clearly deranged as Trump is, we have to start asking not just what's wrong with a society that produces so much support for this chaos theater, but also, who is it that so badly wants Trump to be president? Not just at the bottom, but at the top. There is a term in Latin, cui bono. It means who benefits. Because beyond the angry masses who want to luxuriate in the punishment of migrants, women, trans kids, and black collegians, the real beneficiaries of a Trump autocracy would be those the late great comedian George Carlin used to call the owners of the country, men of great wealth, who have long sought to return to a time when people like them didn't pay income taxes or face government regulation over their businesses and didn't have to worry about labor unions, workers' rights, or competition from women or blacks. They could employ child labor, work their employees way past a 40-hour work week, and reap unlimited profits and leave vast estates to their heirs tax-free. They could call themselves good Christians and never think twice about dirty words like diversity, history, accountability, or equity. These are the men behind organizations like Project 2025, the Claremont Institute, the Heritage Foundation, and whatever Leonard Leo is up to at any given time. Trump, in many ways, is just their useful scare.
We're all here today asking real Americans if they could pass the citizenship test. Do you think you could do it?
Sure.
Maybe.
Easily.
Number one, what is the supreme law of the land?
No!
Guns, liberty, and justice.
Wow. I have no idea.
We might fail us. Yeah.
Good question. Well, I couldn't answer that one right now.
How many amendments does the Constitution have?
32.
32?
10?
No. I don't know.
20-something, I think. Maybe 13. I'm not real sure on that. I worry about number one and number two.
What are the first three words of the Constitution?
In God we trust.
Okay, so that's four.
Life, liberty, and happiness. Is that... No, it's we the people.
That guy said it walking past. You heard you cheated. Yeah. You cheated like...
We're going to put a 100% tariff on every single car that comes across the line, and you're not going to be able to sell those cars. If I get elected, now if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath for the whole, that's going to be the least of it. It's going to be a bloodbath for the country. That'll be the least of it. But they're not going to sell those cars. If this election isn't won, I'm not sure that you'll ever have another election in this country.
Which led to a weekend of useless speculation about whether he actually meant real blood, which is kind of beside the point at this point, since he is actually being prosecuted at the state level and at the federal level for fomenting an actual insurrection that caused a lot of blood, that actually caused the deaths of at least five people. There was at least one person who testified, a police officer, that she was literally slipping in pools of blood on January 6th. So the question of whether he meant actual blood seems a bit beside the point at this point. But what's much more important is what this maniac is actually vowing to do if elected again.
On day one, my administration will terminate every open border policy of the Biden administration. We begin the largest domestic deportation operation in American history, larger than that by far of Dwight Eisenhower. You know, Eisenhower had a similar problem, but peanuts by comparison.
What he isn't telling you is that Eisenhower's plan was actually labeled with the iconically racist term Operation Wetback. It actually led to a lot of human rights abuses and actual deaths. And that is what Trump is promising us in 2025, a mass roundup targeting anyone who looks like an undocumented migrant. And Trump's minions like Stephen Miller are gleefully bragging that Trump will unleash the U.S. military in blue cities like Philadelphia, New York, and Chicago. Or maybe he'll get creative and use the Insurrection Act to deputize his gang affiliates and the Proud Boys, the Oath Keepers, the Boogaloo Boys, and the Three Percenters. Stand back and stand by, am I right? I mean, who better to spot suspicious-looking brown people? So, if you are or look Hispanic, heads up, even if you are actually a citizen and even Latin MAGA. Enrique Tarrio, if I were you, I'd be doubly careful so you don't wind up back where you started and then also deported.
Trump is also threatening to round up and deport anyone who has participated in protests against Israel's siege of Gaza, which is something to know. And this madman, whose brain is clearly addled and little more than a ball of smooth clay at this stage of its deterioration, makes these promises to feed chum to a base that has been drilled by right-wing media to now care more about stopping migrants, even if they themselves live thousands of miles from the southern border, than about the economy or inflation or literally anything else, according to Gallup.
So I went over to X. I don't go to X a lot anymore because X is kind of a soup bone at this point in time. And I see a lot of interesting things like this. Turns out the deep state is kind of awesome. Can I get this video? Because that... Oh, I'm going to find this. But what I see is this. For the Democrats. D for Democrats. This is on the official Democrat website.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to be a bloodbath. And it's going to be a bloodbath for the country.
Jews will not replace us.
But you also had people that were very fine people on both sides.
Are you willing to condemn white supremacists and militia groups from
Proud
militia?
Boys, stand back and stand by.
Please rise for the horribly and unfairly treated January 6th hostages.
There'd be a lot of pardons and commutations of January 6th defendants.
Yes, absolutely.
You tell your supporters now, no matter what, no violence.
And it's going to be a bloodbath.
Why can they do... You know, I understand one time the right got away with the concept of swift boats. And it was pretty bad. I got it. It was pretty bad. I'm not saying it was good. It was bad. It worked. But this shit... This is all they have. They don't have anything else to run on. This is what they have. This... We just did a whole podcast that Netanyahu is a piece of garbage and he needs to be overthrown. And now, because Trump spoke, here's Morning Joe.
Did my core. This is it. How dare you, Donald Trump, tell me what it takes to be a good Jew and not be a good Jew, what it takes to love Israel and not love Israel. First of all, you stand for nothing. What Judaism is all about being a decent human being, about being kind to others. You are the farthest thing from what anybody should say what a good Jew is or isn't. And make no mistake about it, for anybody who says, I'm voting for Donald Trump because he's automatically good for Israel, he would turn on Jews in a second. This is a guy who has a fondness for Hitler, according to his ex-chief of staff, John Kelly. This is a guy who said, there's good people on both sides of Charlottesville. He would turn on Jews in a second if it was in his best interest. I know this could be very controversial. He doesn't care about Israel. He cares about Donald Trump. And how dare you tell me what it takes to be a good Jew?
Okay. Yeah. So when you have to lie to make your point, like the good people on both.
I will totally obliterate the deep state. I will fire.
Donald Trump is obsessed with the deep state.
The deep state, deep state, the deep state is destroying our nation. Either the deep state destroys America or we destroy the deep state.
And many Republicans are widening his paranoia.
These unelected bureaucrats ruining this country.
From a cabal of security agents to
the sick political class that hates our country.
If elected, Trump's vowed to gut the federal government.
Reinstate the Schedule F executive order and, quote, fire rogue bureaucrats.
But who are these bureaucrats and what makes them so dangerous? We needed answers, so we took a trip across America.
In 100 yards, take the exit.
In search of the people behind this threatening entity. First stop, Huntsville, Alabama. Sure looks like some nefarious government activity happens around here.
You have reached your destination.
meet Scott Bellamy.
I am a mission manager in the Planetary Missions Program Office.
He drives a Nissan Titan 4x4. He's loved Star Trek since he was a kid.
Of course I have a favorite character. It's either Captain Kirk or Mr. Spock.
And he may have quite literally saved the planet from annihilation.
Potentially.
You see, Scott managed a mission called
the Double Asteroid Redirection Test.
And back in 2022, his team used your tax dollars to pull off something kind of incredible.
You have an asteroid and you have a spacecraft, and you fly the spacecraft into the asteroid and try to change the trajectory of that asteroid. It's like playing pool in space. Everybody was holding their breath. You know, this is the moment of truth. Did we hit it?
We got it?
And we have impact.
They knocked an asteroid off its course, proving something that had previously only been done in movies.
Saving the world from an Armageddon scenario, potentially.
Next, we traveled deep into the swamp itself, Washington, D.C.
You have arrived.
This is Radhika Fox.
I am the Assistant Administrator for Water at the Environmental Protection Agency.
She loves Pilates, making salads, and watching the Taylor Swift Eras Tour on TV with her family.
I think we're all pretty 1989.
Oh, and she led an operation to make our drinking water lead-free in 10 years.
That's the dream.
Worried and angry about lead contamination, residents of Newark, New Jersey are demanding bottled water and answers.
Lead is a neurotoxin that can cause irreversible brain damage. Folks are drinking out of these pipes right now.
Every single American child we'll soon be able to turn on that faucet, and their moms and dads know that the water they're drinking is clean.
When President Biden announced a nationwide plan to remove lead water pipes, Radhika's team made it happen.
Yep, that's right.
Water utilities would be legally required to replace all remaining lead pipes.
9 million in 10 years or less.
It's an expensive bet.
$50 billion. But those benefits are truly priceless, because it's the well-being of this nation that's at stake.
You want to replace your own water pipes? You got the skills to launch an asteroid-deflecting spacecraft? No. That's why your tax dollars pay experts like Radhika and Scott. Important work like this is happening all over America. From helping 2 million victims of the opioid crisis, to engineering major breakthroughs in nuclear fusion, and helping make hearing aids affordable for 30 million people. Yep, the deep state is hard at work, making America great. Just because we don't know about it doesn't make it suspicious.
You have arrived.
Our final stop, Chicago, Illinois. Meet Nancy Alcantara.
I am the Acting Director of Enforcement for the Wage and Hour Division for the Midwest Regional Office for the U.S. Department of Labor. I had to take a breath, yes.
She still eats Lucky Charms for breakfast, trains for marathons, and loves Latin dancing.
Cumbia, bachata, cha-cha-cha, you name it, I did it.
And she uses your tax dollars to get kids out of working in dangerous slaughterhouses.
13, 14, 15-year-olds working on the kill floor, cleaning body parts, right? Animal carcasses. They're working with machinery such as skull splitters, bone splitters.
Nancy and her colleagues raided slaughterhouses in several states and found more than 100 children working illegally. Last year, their employer, Packers Sanitation, was fined $1.5 million, one of the largest child labor cases in American history.
Kids would die. Kids would get limbs amputated. I don't even want to imagine what would happen if no one did this job.
These guys work for you, but Trump wants them working for him.
Trump wants to fire at least thousands of these people that he calls pejoratively the deep state.
Schedule F would allow Trump to fire up to 50,000 of them and replace them with like-minded people.
Sometimes it's really hard to read the newspaper where, you know, you feel like we as public servants are being attacked.
Now, this doesn't mean that Americans can't have different ideas about how big the federal government should be. After all, there's no shortage of examples of real government overreach and overspend. But Trump's teaching us to expect the worst from people in government, when the truth is, they're actually some of our best.
Here Here's that New York Times video. You know what? Let's just watch
now,
it.
Now, if I don't get elected, it's going to
be
a blood...
to watch it together. Sorry, give me a second. I'll snatch it. Here it is. This is the video.
I will totally New York Times. Obliterate the deep state. I will fire...
Donald Trump is obsessed with the deep state.
The deep state, deep state, the deep state is destroying our nation.
Either the deep state destroys America or we destroy the deep state.
And many Republicans are widening his paranoia.
These unelected bureaucrats ruining this country.
From a cabal of security agents to
the sick political class that hates our country.
If elected, Trump's vowed to gut the federal government.
Reinstate the Schedule F executive order and, quote, fire rogue bureaucrats.
But who are these bureaucrats and what makes them so dangerous? We needed answers, so we took a trip across America.
In 100 yards, take the exit.
In search of the people behind this threatening entity.
Look at it.
First stop, Huntsville, Alabama. Sure looks like some nefarious government activity happens around here.
You have reached your destination.
Meet Scott Bellamy.
I am a mission manager in the Planetary Missions Program Office.
He drives a Nissan Titan 4x4. He's loved Star Trek since he was a kid.
Of course I have a favorite character. It's either Captain Kirk or Mr. Spock.
And he may have quite literally saved the planet from annihilation.
Potentially.
You see, Scott managed a mission called
the Double Asteroid Redirection Test.
And back in 2022, his team used your tax dollars to pull off something kind of incredible.
You have an asteroid and you have a spacecraft.
This is so
fucking disingenuous. You fly the spacecraft into the asteroid and
oh
try
my
to
God.
Change the trajectory
this is
of the
so
asteroid.
So disingenuous.
It's like playing pool in space. Everybody was holding their breath. Yeah, this is the moment of truth. Did we hit it?
We got it.
And we have impact. A giant leap for
they knocked an asteroid off its course. Proving something that had previously only been done in movies.
Saving the world from an Armageddon scenario. Potentially.
Next, we traveled deep into the swamp itself. Washington, D.C.
This kind of stuff is just so disingenuous.
This is
You're
Radhika
making jokes,
Fox.
Huh?
I am the Assistant Administrator for Water at the Environmental Protection Agency.
She loves Pilates, making salads, and watching the Taylor Swift Eras Tour on TV with her family.
I think we're all pretty 1989.
Yeah, there it is
oh,
there.
And she That's led it. An operation to make our drinking water lead-free in 10 years.
That's the dream.
Worried and angry about lead contamination, residents of Newark, New Jersey are demanding bottled water and answers.
Lead is a neurotoxin that can cause irreversible brain damage. Folks are drinking out of these pipes right now.
Every single American child will soon be able to turn on that faucet and their moms and dads know that the water they're drinking is clean.
When President Biden announced a nationwide plan to remove lead water pipes, Radhika's team made it happen.
Yep, that's right.
Water utilities would be legally required to replace all remaining lead pipes.
9 million in 10 years or less.
It's an expensive bet.
$50 billion. But those benefits are truly priceless. Because it's the well-being of this nation that's at stake.
You want to replace your own water pipes? You got the skills to launch an asteroid-deflecting spacecraft? No. That's why your tax dollars pay experts like Radhika and Scott. Important work like this is happening all
this
over
is
America.
Why we have nothing
From helping
nice.
2 million victims
this
of the opioid crisis
nice.
To engineering major breakthroughs in nuclear
depth.
Fusion.
So how is this good?
And helping make hearing aids affordable for 30 million people. Yep. The deep state is hard at work, making America great. Just because we don't know about it doesn't make it suspicious.
You have arrived.
Our final stop, Chicago, Illinois. Meet Nancy Alcantara.
I am the Acting Director of Enforcement for the Wage and Hour Division for the Midwest Regional Office for the U.S. Department of Labor. I had to take a breath, yes.
She still eats Lucky Charms for breakfast, trains for marathons, and loves Latin dancing.
Cumbia, bachata, cha-cha-cha, you name it, I did it.
And she uses your tax dollars to get kids out of working in dangerous slaughterhouses.
13, 14, 15-year-olds working on the kill floor, cleaning body parts, right? Animal carcasses. They're working with machinery such as skull splitters, bone splitters.
Why is that a problem?
Nancy and her colleagues raided slaughterhouses in several states and found more than 100 children working illegally. Last year, their employer, Packers Sanitation, was fined $1.5 million, one of the largest child labor cases in American history.
Kids would die, kids would get limbs amputated. I don't even want to imagine what would happen if no one did this job.
These guys work for you, but Trump wants them working for him.
Trump wants to fire at least thousands of these people that he calls pejoratively the deep state.
Schedule F would allow Trump to fire up to 50,000 of them and replace them with like-minded people.
Sometimes it's really hard to read the newspaper where, you know, you feel like we as public servants are being attacked.
Now, this doesn't mean that Americans can't have different ideas about how big the federal government should be. After all, there's no shortage of examples of real government overreach and overspend. But Trump's teaching us to expect the worst from people in government, when the truth is, they're actually some of our best.
Well, boys and girls, that's how we cook the books on a video. That's how these media do it. It's all tongue-in-cheek. There's no deep state. Trump's a dickhead. That is not what he's talking about. He's talking about what most of us are talking about. What we're talking about is, hey, motherfuckers, we have a serious fucking problem that people that are not elected are running our government right now. Right now, if you want to be honest to yourself, just be 100% honest. Who's running the country? That guy that can't form two sentences with a fucking thesaurus, is he running the country? Because I don't think homie's running the country. I think a bunch of unelected fucking bureaucrats are that you and I didn't elect. And they are making decisions based on their partisan view, worldview, and what's happening. Major things are happening to everybody who's not blue. All they see is blue. Let's put it in context. If for some reason our country got took over from like Huckabee's daughter, freaking Arizona, or Arkansas, and Arkansas lady started taking over and doing everything Arkansian so that you had to do everything rural, would you be cool with it? I'm throwing fucking dice. You're not, man. I will fucking bet you a paycheck. Y'all freak the fuck out. That's what's happening in our country right now. What we have is a bunch of unelected people that are running everything. They get to run the whole country and nobody's in charge of them. Nobody is stopping the fucking insanity. I hate to be that woman in the fucking videos. But I gotta tell you, this shit ain't cool. So, gonna show you a voter that agrees with me. She's black.
In 2012, you voted for
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. 2016,
I voted for Donald Trump.
Hillary Clinton. 2020,
Donald Trump.
Biden. And who will you vote for in 2024?
Donald Trump.
Donald Trump. You may vote for the former president.
I may.
Why do you say that?
My views on certain things have changed. I am very much so riding the fence.
What are you struggling with?
Being in a pattern of doing the same thing that I've been doing, because it's kind of like second nature. Like when you go in a poll, you hit Democrat. Something has to happen. I mean, it's just so expensive to survive. And we're planning on having kids. I don't want to live in a stressful environment trying to rub two pennies together to try to make it either.
Well, now, that's not looking good. There's some doggone video that shows that he is losing Latinos at an alarming rate to Trump, which is, that's all sorts of bad. They can't win. They can't win without it. This one I love a lot because it's all they have. January 6th, he says they were going to release the people. They're not hostages. They're insurrectionists. No police officers beaten. They came back with the same tired shit. You're a liar. No police were killed. Brian Sicknick. He was not killed. He just wasn't. It's a lie. It's a complete lie. It's always been a lie. It's just what it is. Two sound bites really quick. We're going to do a really interesting woke. It's just going to be a TikTok one. ABC plays State Run Media for Biden on Women's Health Executive, and then the 15-week ban abortion. This stuff, that they're going to really drive this because this is the only, it looks like it's the only thing that they win.
So, in states like Michigan, for example, where in 2022, the last election, they put a constitutional right to an abortion on the ballot, and it won, so it is now in Michigan law. What you're going to see from Democrats in a swing state like that is, oh, you now you each voted for this right, and now you're going to have a president, if you elect Donald Trump, who is going to supersede that with a national law. And they think, Democrats think, that kind of fear will get people out to the polls.
And Trump also has taken credit for overturning Roe v. Wade. So he's had to try to have it both ways. It's interesting, though, because privately he has said, according to our colleagues, that he does not see abortion as a political winner. So it's interesting to hear him now laying the groundwork for taking a stance. But you're so right, Dana, no matter what he does, Democrats are going to try to seize on this issue and try to link all Republicans to a national federal abortion ban, which they believe is not going to play well for
Republicans. You know, and part of that is just the way he talks about abortion, right? I mean, that it's this big deal and, you know, you get an abortion at 13 weeks, well, maybe it's 14 weeks. I mean, this is people's lives, right? These are women, it's women's bodies, and they feel some kind of way about these politicians who are trying to enter into these very private decisions about whether or not they want to start a family or have a bigger family. And so I think it's his language. It's very cavalier. It's very callous. And no matter what, he is still the architect of this.
Now to President Biden, set to issue a wide-ranging executive order to promote research on women's health. Our senior White House correspondent, Selena Wang, has those details for us. Good morning, Selena.
Hey, good morning, Robin. The White House is calling this the most comprehensive action ever taken by a president to advance women's health research. Now, this, officials say, the goal here is to make sure that women get the answers that they need about their health, since for far too long, medical research has focused on men and left women out. Now, the president, he is directing federal agencies to collect more data on women's health, and this also adds $200 million in new funding for new research. This includes research around menopause and conditions like osteoporosis that are more likely to occur after menopause. All of this, Robin, coming amid an election year. As the election heats up and the president, he's trying to position himself as a champion of women's health and blaming Donald Trump for taking away women's reproductive rights. But President Biden, he's also urging Congress to step in to close that medical research gap. He's urging Congress to approve $12 billion in new funding for women's health. Turn it up, turn it on.
Whether Joe Biden believes this madness or is simply too weak to resist it, his administration has been completely hijacked by the radical left. The dividing line in America is no longer between right or left. The choice is between normal or crazy.
So a few woke before we move on. Let's get through this crap. Woke people are more likely to be unhappy, anxious, and depressed. Do you think? New York Times finally admits that remote learning didn't work. The Supreme Court of Washington has ruled that prospective lawyers are no longer required to pass the bar to practice because people of color couldn't pass. Really? That's the lawyer I want. The stranger, this is in Washington, loving this early spring weather. You shouldn't be. We should all be horrified by this weather. And to show how crazy they are, they're not going to freaking have air conditioning at the Olympics. Which brings us to our TikTok. Okay, I've been watching a lot of review shows on TikToks and things like that. So I thought we'd go through this freaking Planet Fitness thing. So here is some of them.
Today, I just wanted to say I just came out of Planet Fitness, and there is a man shaving in a women's bathroom. I realize he wants to be a woman. He gets to be a woman. I love him in Christ. He's a spiritual being having a human experience. He doesn't like his gender, so he wants to be a woman. But I'm not comfortable with him shaving in my bathroom.
That's right.
I don't care whatever he wanted to identify as. She was not comfortable with him being in the women's locker room. In the next clip, she adds there was actually a little girl in that locker room too, but I want you to see how Planet Fitness reacted to this.
Day two of Planet Fitness saga. I came in Monday. There's a man in the women's locker room shaving. A little girl sitting in the corner. She could have been 12 years old. In a towel. Kind of freaked out that there's a man shaving in her locker room. And as I said this morning, I got canceled. Planet Fitness is defending the man in the women's locker room rather than the child sitting in the corner with a towel wrapped around her.
I mean, it's bad enough that a woman was uncomfortable with him being in the locker
room.
Let's
go to the next one. This guy's boring.
Planet Fitness. Another one bites the dust. So this old woman, this elderly woman was in there working out. She goes into the locker room. And she sees this man in the women's locker room shaving. Shaving what? I don't know. But shaving, nonetheless. And not far from him is a little 12-year-old girl standing there, very confused. She said she looked scared. She looked didn't know what to do.
Right there. Canceled.
So she approached the man. They had to side with this.
Here's another one. Look at the stock. They have lost, what is it, $5 billion? When someone asks why 5,000 people pay me $15. And that was in there under the hashtag. Of course, I didn't catch it. Here's another one.
Y'all know Planet Fitness is in hot water right now? Recently, a story came out. I think it was in Alaska, if I'm not mistaken. At a Planet Fitness where a woman caught a man in the women's restroom shaving his face and shaving his legs. She then went to complain to the Planet Fitness staff. You know what they told her? Hey, that dude identifies as a T. And she has no right to complain about that. Now, she went ahead to take a photo of this said person. And when I saw the photo of that person, yeah.
A dude doesn't
I can
like
say with full
check.
Honesty, that was no lady.
No.
But then Planet Fitness wanted to double down.
Next one.
You realize what you've done?
Planet Fitness is under fire after Libs of TikTok shared a video of a woman claiming she witnessed a man shaving in the women's locker room at the location she's a member of. In the video, the woman, Patricia Silva, said there was a young girl wrapped in a towel sitting in the corner that looked to be as young as 12 years old. Planet Fitness canceled her membership, then banned Patricia from the location after her complaint and post to social media. Then they revised their gender identity policy after the incident. All members, including those who identify as transgender, can use locker rooms and programs based on their self-reported gender identity. Here's the quiet part out loud. What's stopping any man from joining a Planet Fitness tomorrow, self-reporting his identity as a woman, just to enter the women's locker room to see you naked? Right now, nothing except our wallets, because it's going to happen.
Bingo. Planet Fitness is the trans
this
woman
guy
in the room
does
with us
too.
Right now because... Here we go. People are boycotting Planet Fitness because, you know, this day and age, as a full-grown man, you're allowed to claim that you're a woman and then granted access into women's spaces. You know, as always, fuck how biological women feel, right? Patricia Silva, she wasn't too thrilled about the situation, took to social media. She's the one that actually made this public and said that there was a man shaving in the woman's locker room at Planet Fitness. There was a little girl present. And then she was the one that got her membership revoked. Planet Fitness then doubled down and said, you know, as long as you identify as a woman, you claim that you're a woman, baby, it's a free-for-all. What is going on? It's very clear that we have this
guy,
man
so.
Attaching himself to the LGBT community. Community, hiding under the umbrella, using it as
okay,
a
okay. Now we have another one.
Planet
he did
Fitness
too.
Is the trans woman in the room with us right now? Because...
Oh, I'm sorry.
Here Here we go.
He did two of these, I guess. Here's another one.
Shame on you, Planet Fitness. Another one bites the dust.
I think this is the original that everybody was covering.
This elderly woman was in there working out. She goes into the locker room, and she sees this man in the woman's locker room.
Here's my way for a quick pump when I received some very disturbing news. Planet Fitness allows men to shave in women's locker rooms and cancels the memberships of any Sheila brave enough to talk about it. I'm done with Planet Fitness. It's bad enough that a handsome alpha male like me can't even get a set of curls in without being recorded and ogled by scantily clad women.
Isn't that true?
I go to the gym to work up a sweat with the boys, not to be objective.
I just want to say how proud I am because I finally canceled my Planet Fitness gym membership. I have had a membership since 2016, and I haven't been to Planet Fitness since 2017. Okay, and the reason why is because if you know about Planet Fitness, you have to cancel, you have to either go to the location mm-hmm. that you signed up at, mm-hmm. or you have to write a certified letter in the mail, send it to them, and say you want to cancel, which yep. is like...
It's
anyway,
so much work.
The reason why I couldn't do it is because I signed up in Georgia, but I was living in Florida for all those years. And so I've been paying $20 a month since 2016. I haven't been since 2017. So I'm so proud because I canceled. And I'm going to tell y'all real quick. I'm talking too long. But I saw somebody on TikTok say, call the location that you signed up at.
That feeling when you pass an NASM course.
What makes NASM courses the best for fitness pros? For starters, I was able to access my courses from any device.
Then, once I passed my exams, I was prepared to coach clients from day one. Not only do I get...
Planet Fitness has a non-discrimination policy that states that they will not discriminate against transgender individuals. So when this woman films and harasses a transgender woman in the locker room, she gets mad because they revoke her membership.
Well, I was offended. I took a picture of him.
This cisgendered woman not only films the transgender woman, she also posts it on Facebook. I just wanted to give a round of applause to Planet Fitness because this is what true allyship looks
like. Thank you
shut
for
up.
Thank you for calling.
So canceling online.
What's the protocol for canceling my membership?
Okay, I can go ahead and give you that email.
Well, are you aware of what's like circulating in the news right now?
I am not.
So in Planet Fitness, a 12-year-old girl was in the girl's locker room, and Planet Fitness allowed a man in the locker room because he, quote, identifies as a woman. So. So just watch yourself because you're a girl, you're a female. They're letting men in the locker room. I went looked up Planet
Fitness. Here's one my favorite right here.
Planet Fitness just canceled my gym membership because they don't protect women's spaces and they prioritize men over women.
Good for her. Good for her. Which brings us to a very interesting one. I've never played anything like this. I'm going to play the end of somebody's podcast and we're going to talk about it because it is scary AF.
My boy moms feel me on this, but my son has my heart and my soul. I obviously am obsessed with Stevie Lee. She is just the greatest little girl in the world.
That's her daughter, by the way. Daughters love you less? Before I had a son, someone explained she could fart and her daughters would be like, ah, mom. But her son would just take a big whiff, smile, and look at her and say, it smells great. I laughed, but it's surprisingly somewhat like that. I don't know, can't describe it. This is the weirdest thing I've ever read, and I think it speaks for itself. True, my boys have saved me so many times. I don't think I'll ever be loved the way my boys love their mama. Somebody just replied, weird. Yes, Your Honor, I'd like to bring in my next witness, Sigmund Freud, please. Would you take the stand? I bring up Sigmund Freud because a lot of people talk about this when they're talking about boy moms, but basically he has a psychoanalysis that he describes as the Oedipus complex, where young boys, usually between the ages of 3 and 6, develop an unconscious infatuation with their mother, and they also feel like they're in competition with their father, okay, for their mother's attention. They're competing with their mother's attention. They feel resentful over the father, okay? It's called the Oedipus complex because it's based on a story in mythology where Oedipus unknowingly married his mother, okay? And his mother's name was Jocasta. I bring this up because I think that this is actually a Jocasta's complex, which is also another phenomenon that happens and has been sort of psychoanalyzed as well. And I think that that's what we're seeing here, okay? We're seeing a major problem where I really believe that this is beyond motherly love. These toxic boy moms have taken it beyond that. This is a mother who might actually be in love with her son. This is that, okay? That's a mother, by the way. That's his mother, by the way, who's climbing up with her legs around, wrapped around his torso after his football game. So inappropriate, but here's the caption. "This boy will forever and always have my heart. Gina captured the end of this moment, and I'm so grateful. When I walked up to hug my baby boy after his game, he immediately picked me up and just held me. It may have been 20 seconds, 30 seconds, a minute. I have no idea. But in this moment, time stood completely still. I honestly don't know what I did to deserve you, but I am thankful every second of every single day for you." Does that sound like a caption that a mother should be writing about her son or a boyfriend? Okay, you tell me. "Put me in, coach." So she's taking pictures with him. Does this seem like the behavior of a mother to you? I don't think so.
Later, babe.
Tell me you're a boy mom without telling me you're a boy mom.
See ya, brah. Bye, mommy.
Next topic. Another concerning element to this whole
vlogs from her daughter's point of view. In the few vlogs she has posted of her daughter, she has already received over 50 million views combined. Since posting, she has been shamed in the comment section for her daughter using a milk bottle to go to sleep at the age of 2. And the fact that her husband takes her 2 and 4 year old on a golf cart in an open road. I'm not going to get into that, but I'm going to focus on the internet safety. What has been most alarming is what Avery posts in these vlogs of her daughter. In this particular vlog, her daughter is sucking whipped cream off her finger. But what is more alarming is that this video has 106,000 saves. On Instagram, Avery posted a picture of her daughter's lower half in a leotard. Someone commented that they hate to be this person, but to be careful with the poses and outfits because there's creeps out there in the internet. Avery responded that as her mom, she would always prioritize her safety.
If you have a comment like this on your page and you don't think about it and do research as a mother and start to say, okay, maybe this person has a point. Let me look and see if this is truly like a safe place for this person. I mean, TikTok of all places, you have no idea who is on this app. Her safety is my number one priority. And then to continue to post your daughter on TikTok, that can't be true as long as you're posting your daughter on TikTok. You can't.
She then posted a TikTok of her daughter in said leotard, and that video has over 189,000 saves. But the worst one so far is Avery doing the phonia trend with her daughter, where her daughter's lower half is spread open to the camera. And the caption reads, "Not as flexible as she used to be." There are so many comments like these asking her to be more careful, accusing Avery of knowing what she's doing just to get a bag, someone calling out the alarming number of saves on the video, and even someone calling her the next Ren Eleanor. But the worst comment under this video of this little girl is someone asking to pre-order. Absolutely no hate to this creator, but I do think there's a safe way to post your kids online.
These are some that I wanted to bring up. So this is one that was done in September of last year. Grocery shopping date while brother is at school, and her daughter has no top. She's wearing just overalls. And I mean, these videos are getting millions of views. So I just don't know why the hell you would ever post something like that in a million years. And then here's the hashtags: mom and daughter, hashtag toddler mom, mom life, mom's OTD outfit ideas. Like, she wants people to see the outfit ideas, but it's like, you don't have your daughter doesn't have a shirt on. You're sick.
Hey, ass wipes, come with me to my first date.
This is an example of one of her viral videos that she got very popular over, where she does a voiceover. So this is the video of her daughter in a leotard.
Dance class. Mom squeezed my rolls into this tiny ass outfit and bought me tap shoes that are cutting off the circulation of my cankles.
Squeezed my rolls into an outfit and saying that her daughter has cankles. I mean, to say something like this about your daughter, I don't have words for how disturbing and disgusting you are. Honestly, I don't. I don't know if I've seen anything so disturbing as this, to openly say these things and you think it's funny. My heart honestly breaks for your daughter, it really does.
Immediately changed into my Crocs because I kept eating shit on the wood floor with my tap shoes. Before dance, I had to make sure I completed my morning chore, which was mowing the floor. And you can bet your sweet ass I won't be dropping this baba out of my mouth.
Your mom following her around the camera, what a sad life. Your mom, who's so out of touch, who, her words, not mine, loves your brother more, follows you around like you're a prop, like you're a circus animal, and films you and makes fun of you on camera. Can you imagine that life? Well, I think this kind of gives us some more insight as well. She just posted this one actually recently in the last couple days. When you carried her for 9 months, gained 65 pounds, had a C-section, and breastfed for 14 months just for her to look nothing like me. All that work and what did it get me? It's really funny when these moms who get a shit work done are absolutely baffled when their kids come out looking nothing like them. Yet you don't look anything like you either. So obviously I'm very unhappy about this whole situation. I'm disturbed. You know, all I can think about is this digital footprint and this legacy that she's leaving for her daughter, that her daughter will eventually grow up and find these videos and see the way that she was treated and see the differences in the way that her brother has been treated versus herself, the awful things that her mom said about her, and not being able to have any control over that. She is not able to give informed consent about whether or not she wants to appear in these videos. It's actually almost something so insidious, I just thought of this, but to do voiceover videos where you're narrating her day, almost as if it came from her brain, like you're giving this kid a voice that is not theirs. These are not thoughts that your daughter's having. Your daughter is an innocent child, and you're swearing in these videos. You're pretending like the voice in her head is saying, I have rolls, I have cankles, I'm pudgy, I'm this, I'm annoying, I'm addicted to a bottle. Like, this is something so disturbing and disgusting. And the problem is that people like this continue to get away with it. And I had mentioned this earlier, but this influencer got rewarded with a trip to go to Bora Bora with Tarte Cosmetics. This actually happened before the Tarte Cosmetics trip. So Tarte, what are you thinking? Are there no other creators in the world that people can support? This is just another insight into why child exploitation is such a pressing issue right now. As the internet changes, we must change with it. And this has got to stop. It really does. These children need to be protected, and no one's doing anything about it, it feels. You know, I think one thing I've seen a lot online is that people say, well, you're jealous of boy moms and you're just jealous of us because we love our sons. All we're doing is loving our sons. And I have no problem. I think most people can agree with this. We have no problem with you loving your son. We want you to love your son. However, it's absolutely embarrassing and a problem that you are making your sons pay for the fact that you do not have successful relationships as an adult. You should not have your son act as your partner, as your husband, as your boyfriend. They should not be fulfilling those roles in your life, as they so clearly are. You are putting your own issues onto your children. You are creating lifelong problems for your kids that they're gonna have to deal with for the rest of their life. And not only just your sons are you giving them problems where they have issues moving on from you and they have issues with their relationships as they grow older and they move on and they try to make their own space in this world, but you're also creating problems if you have daughters as well that they're gonna have to deal with. I'm sure many of you watching right now are those women that grew up in these situations where your parent favored your brother and you had to pay the price for that. And it's not right. This is not normal behavior, okay? So stop it. Yeah, that's my video today on toxic boy moms. I hope you've enjoyed it. I have a ton of videos that are coming. I have like honestly 4 ideas right now. I'm just trying to pick which one I want to do next, honestly. So I'll probably be filming that in the next couple days. So please subscribe if you did like this video and leave a like if you liked it as well. And I will see you guys in my next video.
So if you saw at the end and they talked about it, all those freaking saves, that's all pedophilia. I never thought about that in a million years. Back in the day when we had our grandkids, I used to put pictures up of them in their diapers running around. Never thought about the pedos. But my wife pointed it out to me as we watched this last night. Some of that stuff is crazy with the mom jumping on her football son. That's a little crazy. She needs to find a hubby and or some boyfriend and fuck him, because that ain't normal. You don't jump on your teenage son and hump him. That's just weird. But the way this is happening now, these mothers, they all want to get TikTok famous. So as a show, I don't know if I got that part in, she got a free trip to Barbados or some shit. They get free cosmetics, they get all this stuff because they get big crowds. So they got big crowds about her daughter, and then all of a sudden you find out the big crowds are pedos, grown-ass men making comments, downloading pictures of her daughter in a diaper, in poses, licking whipped cream, I went to bed so sick last night, like sick of humanity. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. That's real? People are actually doing that? Calm the fuck on, you're sick. But it's a sick world, man. It's just a sick fucking world. So that wraps up another episode of Flyover Politic Podcast. Share with family and friends. Go to Flyover Politic K on SoundCloud, Rumble 482467, Old Dude Music Review. I'm going to do a show eventually. 553-2123, and also on, excuse me, Flyover Politic with a K. You can email the show at foppodcast@gmail.com. Next show, 24 March, you're our Lord, 2024. Until then, disconnect from all your devices. Don't give the yeah yeahs. Be present for your family and friends' life. And as always, thanks for listening and take care.